Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we're going to dive into the last two Milwaukee Bucks Brooklyn Nets games. We're going to dive in so deep, we're going to get sticky.
We're going to dive off a cliff here, Mike, with these games. Sorry, that was morbid. That's too morbid to start the show with.
Let's start the show. Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com. The Athletic. Get yourself behind that paywall. Go to TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys. Wow. And Brian.
Wow. Couple of pros.
The Nets are floundering.
Yeah.
If they were a fish, they would be a flounder.
Mike, what did you watch the games? Were you able to not avert your eyes while that was happening, not shield your face, because those were some stressful games. All three of them, bad for different reasons.
I think if I'm going to be real honest about this, right?
Oh, wow.
I think positives and negatives. I have both positives and I have negatives.
All right.
But we're coming off, we're recording this on Wednesday at 1:01 p.m. And the Nets have lost three in a row. They've lost two in a row to the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm. The Nets, a team that was previously last week in the number one seed, is actually getting closer and closer to the three seed, which actually doesn't really matter, to be honest, two versus three. But, Brian, I feel like you're in an emotional place right now after that Bucks game. Tell me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, basically, here's why it's an emotional thing, because I think I reached a conclusion, Mike. And sometimes conclusions can be good and they can be bad. And this conclusion was the latter. It was a bad conclusion, which is to say that we're not that good of a team without James Harden. It's just, I mean, we're good, but we're not good enough to get past, certainly not Milwaukee, maybe not Philly, but our hopes and dreams are well and good. Gotta have a motorcycle right when I'm getting emotional. Hopes and dreams are truly pinned to the James Harden return experience. Yes. And that's a conclusion that, you know, there's just no two ways about it anymore in my mind. It's locked in. James Harden is the engine that makes this train go, this locomotion go.
He's the caboose.
He's the caboose, the engine. He's the...
We're throwing coal inside of him.
Yeah.
Getting him steamed up.
It's like a...
internal combustion engine.
It's so obvious, too. It's so conspicuous just how much he actually makes this offense work. It's funny because we were winning games without him, whatever, but we were like mostly banging up bad teams. Once we actually played against a team who was like committed to playing a version of playoff defense, it was like, which is, I think, Milwaukee very much like rose to the occasion to be like, we're going to put our foot in the ground here about this whole Nets stomping their way to the finals BS we've been hearing. I think that there was plenty of bulletin board material going up, flying all over the bulletin boards everywhere. And
there's just a bunch of tack boards.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Everyone's pinning up quotes.
And they really dug down, played some real defense, and it effed us up good. It screwed us up in a variety of ways.
Yeah, but the Nets still scored 118 last night, and they scored 118 after missing 10 free throws.
Dude, in crunch time, when it mattered, when they turned up, that was it. That's how you finish games. That's how you close games.
I guess here's the positive. I'll start positive that'll spin out, and it aligns with the point that you were just saying, which is that the Bucks were by far the more motivated team, right? Blake Griffin talked about it after Tuesday night's game, where he was like, Dante DiVincenzo can't get six offensive rebounds ever again. It's essentially what he said. I love calling out Delaware's own Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
I think it's a good motivating factor for your Brooklyn Nets that they actually lost these two games, as bad and as scary as it is, and as likely now that the number one seed is pretty much like out of the picture, right? Like, of course it could happen, but we detailed this on the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
The Sixers' schedule is one of the easiest in the NBA, and the Nets, in terms of remaining games, and the Nets is one of the hardest, and the Nets have what? There's only six more games left in the season at this point. So the number one seed is not within grasp. It is far away. I think it's a good motivation thing that the Nets lost this game. I think it at least in this mindset, if they had just rolled over the Bucks, yeah, that'd be great. That would be awesome. They would go into maybe a potential Bucks series just feeling like overconfident and not a good way. Mm-hmm. I think, in fact, this could be spun and be like, you could tell Durant and Irving were in the mindset like, these games matter. I'm concerned about the role players that surrounded those two guys, because basically no one else stepped up besides Blake Griffin maybe in that moment. We were going to have a Joe Harris conversation. Do you feel like it's worth having a Joe Harris conversation?
Yeah, I mean, we could do that. Yeah, if you've got some spicy Joe Harris takes.
He's not worth the money. He's terrible. Wow. He's the worst shooter.
Wow. Oh, my Lord.
I'm a little worried about our friend Joe. I'm a little worried.
Let me guess your take before you give it. Is that okay?
Please. I'm here.
So, based on his past playoff experience that he doesn't rise to like high stress occasions, is this part of your argument that you're going to make here? And as we're getting closer to high stress games, that he's sort of receding into the background, that's cause for concern.
I'm a little worried about Joe. So he scored 12 points in this game against the Bucks. He was 4 for 8 from three. So you can't be upset with that.
What are you so worried about?
There are just moments. There's just long stretches of the game, probably because Kyrie has the ball and Kevin Durant have the ball, and then he's just waiting for a pass, and they're not really running the Joe Harris plays anymore, because you don't run the J.J. Redick coming around to screen plays, long developing plays, searching open for a three-point shooter. When you have Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, you just don't run those plays, right? Like, because those guys, by their own force of will, should open up free shots for Joe Harris. And they have. And Joe is leading, I think he's still leading the NBA in three-point shooting percentage, or is in the top three or whatever it is. But in these big games, there are times when Joe just doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have James Harden out there, like, it's not going to matter as much. But the Nets really need that, that fourth player. And I wish Joe's threat of three was a little bit more threatening to the other team at times. Like, I don't know if it spooks them the way it used to with Kyle Korver or Steph Curry. I don't know. I just, there's something there. There's something missing that happens in big games. It's not like I'm saying he like chokes. Obviously, he's shot 50% from three on eight attempts. Fantastic.
I've been noticing a progressive.
I just want a little more. I want a little more.
I think KD is on your pay. Have you been noticing a progressive chirpiness going on between KD in general? KD's like reached his sort of like competitive, wherever that like nerve ending is like most exposed, it's there. You can tell he's like in a state of agitation, which has been interesting because like his leadership, his version of leadership is pretty acerbic, I'll say. It's a little bit intense. Ooh. It's sort of the, I was talking about this, it's a little bit of the Michael Jordan version of it, which is like...
Is it sardonic maybe? No, it's not sardonic.
No, not at all. It's very literal. I forget who it was. I think it was Uncle Jefe Converde even, everyone's favorite, who
Cinco de Mayo shout out
shout out to Cinco de Mayo, who was shooting free throws towards somewhere like in the last 6 minutes of that game last night, and I got the sense that people were doing the high fives, and Kevin Durant was like, hey, make this next effing shot, dog. Like,
the Nets not even threesome. Harden and Durant really have that energy this season. Like, Harden, there was a shot. I don't know if – did you see the shot of Harden on the bench? I don't know if he was exactly watching DeAndre Jordan, but Someone tweeted this out, and I retweeted it. There's an image of the bench where, like, DeAndre Jordan's guarding Giannis, and they shoot to the bench, and James Harden, obviously in street clothes, something bad happens on the floor, and Harden just, like, puts his hand into his face and just shakes his head and is so disappointed. There is that energy. This team, and I like the energy, because I know that they care. Like, I know that they want that championship with this team and with this squad. And I think Durant was showing that signs of, like, there was a little bit of that energy of, like, this should be a better – we should be better right now.
Yeah.
Even without Harden, the team should be playing better.
And can I also say that, like, the part that was really, like, when it was truly falling apart, like, in that last, I don't know, 4 minutes of the game last night where it was, like, tied at 104 or somewhere around there, and then they went on, like, a 16-point run or something stupid like that. And it was all off these, like, kind of broken plays but ended up in kind of layups and stuff of just, like, giving up a bunch of, like, offensive rebounds and having it just all be, like, sloppy and then just, like, random Dante DiVincenzo putbacks. And it was really triggering to watch for everybody. And that's the kind of, like, you know, that, and then, like, to have that be going on, and then on the other end, like, just super not executing in crunch time minutes from a Kyrie plus KD-led offense was a meme before. So how much do you read into the meme of, like, basically without James Harden, Kyrie and KD equal a 500, around 500 team? I mean, because those are the stats. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I said read into the meme, Mike. So I'm not telling you that this is how I feel, but this is basically, like, what it is. It's I forget what the number is, but it's basically 10 and 10, something like that.
It may be a proper meme if it's Kyrie KD without Harden, Caris LeVert, Torian. Like,
hang on. Let me recontextualize this for you. We are a 500 team with Kyrie.
Let me recontextualize this for you. Brian hates Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Right.
I'm recontextualizing.
I came at this with, like, it seems like it's not what's actually literally what's happening, and it is. Yeah. We are literally a 500 team when we have those two guys and not James Harden. So that's actually
what's
happening.
I literally hate Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
I literally hate you right now
Kyrie Irving his due.
But the point is like, do you worry about that number at all? Does that need to be higher?
Okay,
does
so
that
the
win
worry,
total need to be higher?
The worry would only come in if I believe that James Harden's not going to come back healthy. And I can't answer that question.
I want to put that in a vacuum. I want to put that in a vacuum because obviously, yes, that changes everything and that's great. Is this like an average to above average team without James Harden?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And that's fine because, as I said, not only is James Harden not playing, but all the guys you gave up to get James Harden, the idea of giving up all that depth to bring in Harden is that then you have three stars and you're amazing. This team needs James Harden. Like, that's, yes, they need James Harden. You hope that he comes back healthy. You hope he doesn't re-aggravate his hamstring. He's traveling with the team. That's usually a good indication that he's coming back soon. I think Nash even said something like he's progressing on his way back. You know, I'm done with progress. I want to see production.
Is he going
to
play a regular season game? Is he going to play another one?
I think he is. I think he is. What, there's six games left, as we said?
Yeah.
If I can do my math correctly, which someone's going to be like, you didn't do math correctly.
Is he getting three games in there? Is he getting, how many games is he getting in?
Well, I'm going to take a peek at the schedule as we're talking. But so do you think, I think he will. Do you think it's necessary? Like, do you think there's benefit to giving him regular season games to sort of work in the flow? Here's the schedule as it lays out going forward. So the Nets play at Dallas, Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks on Thursday Night Basketball, TNT, against your Brooklyn Nets in Dallas. Then they go to at Denver, a 10 p.m. tip. Brian and I will be on Twitch live streaming. Well, Brian will be. I don't know if I will. And then at Chicago. And then so it's at Chicago, Spurs home, Bulls home, Cleveland home to end out that season. That's a nice – the Nets are probably not going to get the one seed now. I don't know how much they care about 2 versus 3, but that's a nice progression after coming off those two Dallas-Denver games going into sort of like a nice cushy landing spot.
Mm-hmm.
Those home games are interesting. Now, Harden's on this road trip. That, again, is an indication that he's going to come back sooner rather than later. There's three more road games to go. Could he go return at Chicago for that one game? And then it's a back-to-back. It's Chicago Tuesday, Spurs Wednesday at home. You sit out that Spurs game, and then it's a back-to-back Saturday-Sunday matchup, Bulls-Cavs. Harden plays another Bulls game on that Saturday and then sits out the Sunday game to finish out the season. I could see that happening. This team needs – here's a take, right? The Nets need James Harden.
Yeah.
They do. This whole thing is built around Kevin Durant's the singular talent, right? Like he can get off a shot whenever he wants. Harden's been the best player on the team. He was the MVP candidate. When he was playing on the team was incredible. We haven't seen the big three play together really at all this year. But like Harden is the guy who, if the team sucks around him, he impacts winning the most, right? Like I think if we were power ranking sort of the, if you only could have one of them, and you wanted your team to be competitive, I would put Harden above Durant because Harden controls the ball more. He dishes out, he hands more assists. He's more able to sort of be the entire offense while also keeping the shooters involved. Where as great as Durant is, he's just not like, he's ultimately such like a unique weapon, but he isn't this sort of all-consuming force in the way that Harden is.
Yeah,
this team needs Harden, and James Harden makes a massive difference in a Bucks game. But there's things in the Bucks game that I could feel like could be positives and could be negatives that we could discuss in some level.
I'm trying to think of like what kind of weapon, like if I was doing like a killer comparison of a kind of like you know what kind of, and like because Kevin Durant,
well, Harden's a Gatling gun. If we're
like a Civil War era
that
super inefficient, inaccurate.
That's you not can tell, what I get. Not a big gun family guy. Not weapons weren't a part of the Smeltz
family. You can even go into like video game weapons, but I'm saying like Kevin Durant's like why he is an effective weapon.
RCP 90.
He's like almost like, have you ever played Perfect Dark? On the N64? He's like the Far Sight, which is just like wherever you are, it kind of like shoots through a wall and hits the thing.
We could do GoldenEye weapons to Nets players.
You should pick up that Perfect Dark. It's aged really well. You'll love it.
I'm going to walk over and go to GameStop after I can unload all my GameStop stock, and I will buy Perfect Dark. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. Coming back, we're going to dive much more into Bucks, Nets, and then spin it forward.
Mm-hmm. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Brian. Here's the things. This is a new segment. Things I like, things I'm mad about.
Okay.
So the things I liked in the Bucks game were that Durant and Kyrie. I mean, they were like pretty amazing, pretty great. They, you know, they put up, both of them put more than 30 points. Durant missed the two threes at the end of the game in that same possession that, you know, would have brought the game, I think, within one possession or 1 point or whatever it would have been. Durant missed the shot that you wanted to see him make, but both were pretty great. And I'm a person that believes you learn things from losses. You learn more from losses than wins. Can we talk about the sagging defense though on Giannis? Can we talk about the way the Nets are attacking Giannis for a second?
Yeah.
I understand it, right? Like that is what you should do. That's what everyone in the NBA has done against Giannis. I feel though that like all these past two games have done is just give Giannis like even more confidence going into a potential, you know, second round matchup against the Brooklyn Nets because he, from game one and then the first half of game two, was hitting threes at a ridiculous rate for his career. And it just made the Nets look silly.
But do you think that this is playing rope-a-dope with our true secret weapon, who only played for 5 minutes in our back-to-back series of Nick Claxton? Is that the long con?
Those Nick Claxton possessions, I want to see all those Twitter NBA analysts, the guys who break down film, I want to see them break down those Nick Claxton Giannis possessions because your boy Nick was locking down two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think he's a two-time MVP. Here's what I don't want, okay? I understand the sagging defense. That is what you do against Giannis. He is such an unstoppable force. When he goes to the rim, he's so quick, so powerful, that if you have a guy directly on him, Giannis is going to get by, and he's going to get by for a dunk. I get that. So you sag because he can't shoot. I don't want the Nets and Steve Nash to be stuck in that style of defense if they get into the series with the Bucks. The Nets have to be flexible and they have to have options defensively. And they can't just simply have, hey, we're going to sag off of Giannis and give him that shot. Because you know what happens? That's what the Bucks did against the Raptors when the Raptors won the championship that year. We're going to give them those threes. Guess what? Fred VanVleet, new dad, Fred VanVleet, shot threes all over him. And the Raptors went on and beat the Bucks, and then they went on to win the NBA championship. The Bucks have been victims of, we have a way we're going to do this. We have a system. We have a way we're going to coach. We have a way we're going to defend. We have a way we're going to play offense. And it has failed them. I want, and Nash has been good with this, flexibility. Don't just sag. Give me like a couple of Bruce Brown possessions on Giannis where Bruce Brown's like right in his grill. Durant defended Giannis at times, and I want to see that. Frankly, we've talked about this before. I think this is your take that I made fun of you about. James Harden. James Harden on Giannis. Harden's a big beefy boy.
Are you going to drop Blake Griffin's name, who gave you great saggy? He gave great saggy minutes last night. This is some of the best saggy minutes.
Blake Griffin. I have been so damn proud of your boy Blake. He's been pretty impactful, particularly because LaMarcus Aldridge is obviously not playing anymore. Blake has just become even more important. There's an amazing stat before you dive in here and my soliloquy ends. Seth Bartnow from The Athletic, former director of analytics for the Milwaukee Bucks, had a great thing in his column on The Athletic of Blake Griffin's dunk rate by season. And he goes from rookie season on. It's just percentages of bar graph. Love a good bar graph. Blake was dunking the ball about 19% of his field goal attempts at his peak with the Clippers. And then it goes down, 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 down. In Detroit, in his all-NBA season, his 2018-2019, when he was like within the all-NBA, only 3% of his field goal attempts were dunks. Now in Brooklyn, it's up to 8%.
Wow.
Blake is dunking.
He's dunking.
And he's doing it well. How did you feel about how the Nets were defending Giannis? Were you upset?
I'm not as opposed to Sagnacious D as you are. See what I did
there? The old saggy balls. The old saggy balls D.
Sagnacious D. When it's done skillfully, it's actually a very you get the sense that Giannis can get pretty confused because I think where Giannis is at his worst and is where he's like laterally trying to break down a defender from the elbow. Like once you get him in there and he's sort of like trying to, he doesn't have great like open hips. He hasn't been doing his downward F dogs. So you can tell his hips aren't super open and he doesn't have the great, he really wants to be going downhill on people. So I think like sagging is a good strategy if you're doing it well. I was actually like at times impressed with DeAndre Jordan's ability to get out on him and contest his little mid-rangers once in a while, whereas he like almost never does that against anybody else. But it seems like in this case, they were like, hey, we're all going to be paying attention to how you do this. So now is a good time to actually do this. So he was doing it here and there. It wasn't a great, obviously, like fit, and Giannis had his way for most of the game in those minutes. Blake a good look at him. He was doing some good Stagnation stuff, especially in crunch time, because Giannis at the end of that game was not the reason why they were like kicking butt, really. It was a lot of everybody else.
It was Dante DiVincenzo.
It was real, and also like Drew Holiday's. I continue to underrate Drew Holiday, and I guess I'm like the only one that's doing that anymore. But
he would have been a nice net. I know the Nets got James Harden. James Harden's way better.
He would have been fine. He's no James Harden, Mike. What are you talking about?
Well, the thing is that, so Holiday is the best perimeter defender in the NBA, right? And so in a playoff matchup, because that's all you're thinking about, right? Like, yeah, the Nets lost these two games. They were in Milwaukee. There's all the caveats that we could lap onto it. But in a seven-game series, if Harden's healthy, Drew Holiday will be on either Kyrie or Harden. But that means the other guard is going to be open. And, I mean, again, Holiday was guarding Kyrie last night, and Kyrie had 38. So it's not like, you know, it's not like he's going to shut down everyone throughout the entire series. The thing that bothered me beyond the sagging defense, the old saggies, it's just that it was just too damn easy. Too damn easy for the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like offensively, there was no pressure, right? Like, the Nets didn't give it an obscene amount of points. They didn't give up a Oklahoma City Thunder to the Indiana Pacers obscene amount of points or any Wizards game in the history of the world. But it just didn't feel like – it felt like the Bucks were dedicated and intense and trying to do everything they could to win the game, where the Nets were kind of like feeling themselves out throughout the game and not –
Well, for the entire series, we weren't playing any of our dogs the entire series. We played 5 minutes of Nick Claxton, 5 seconds of Bruce Brown, no Alizé Johnson. I mean, what kind of dognacious D are you going to get without the – I'm just going full dognacious every D. And the expectation that we're just going to have – we're like Mike James is going to flip that switch is that ain't it.
You hate Mike James.
I'm not loving Mike James.
Impactful minutes.
He's okay. He's fine.
He scored 10 points in 10 minutes.
Yeah. He was in during a lot of the other like parts that weren't going so well. I find Mike James an unreliable defender. I'll say that.
He scored 10 points in 10 minutes and had a negative 8 plus minus.
Yeah. Anyways, so, I'm not trying to dog him specifically. You throw in Landry Shamet's name or anybody else because I didn't see him turn up.
6-3.
But anyways, I don't know if there was, again, we're like kind of like joking about this, but if there is a long con here where we're hiding all of our like high energy players to not play against the best teams, that's one version of it. But I would have liked to see a whole lot more Bruce Brown, a whole lot more Nick Claxton. In the one like sequence that Nick Claxton was in, he looked amazing still. Like there was a great moment where he closed out perfectly on a Bobby Portis three. And then when Bobby Portis made his move to go around the closeout, he switched off perfectly on Giannis and caused a loose ball that ended up in his steal. It was like, for a guy, anyways, we've talked about Nick Claxton's defense forever, but those like, he's one of the few guys where like defensive moments like that stick out in your mind. And he was just not playing. And he just was not playing this whole series. So
yeah, I mean, he was coming back from COVID.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm not saying
the classic ramp.
Yeah, they're ramping him up. But I was just saying, like, that's a big part of any. As crazy as it is to say at this point in the season, or maybe not. It's I guess less crazy at this point in the season. He's a big part of whatever strategy we're throwing to shut down a Giannis. Not shut him down, but to do any kind of defensive strategery. That's going to be a name that you throw at him, and we just weren't doing it.
Yeah, and he I mean, we joke about James Harden's D on Giannis. Not that he's going to be guarding on, but like the guys who can press up on Giannis and make him feel a little bit more uncomfortable are Nick Claxton and James Harden and Kevin Durant. But Durant, you're just not going to. I don't feel comfortable putting that workload on Kevin Durant.
I didn't like that Durant was guarding Giannis at times, and then he was getting PJ Tucker at the other end. I wanted that. Let's go back and forth. I think Durant wanted that. I think he was getting frustrated with the asymmetry of that whole situation. And also PJ Tucker's annoying.
But if you look at the plus minus, and again, plus minus is silly. It doesn't tell you really anything beyond – it does not the whole picture at all. There's something that I feel like something's going on with Jeff Green that we don't fully know about in terms of there's like a lack of pop. I mean, he's obviously had amazing dunks recently. And so it's not like athleticism pop. He's just had these like, there's just game. This is just the Jeff Green experience, I guess. The classic Jeff Green experience where there's some games where he scores 27 and he has makes five threes and has two great dunks and gets a bunch of rebounds and is super active. And then there's a game, I mean, he scored 10 points and had five rebounds. That's all you can expect from Jeff Green. But
I'm not going to sit here and take this Jeff Green slander. That's for damn sure.
I'm looking
not on Cinco de Mayo of all days.
Fa Verde. I'm a little shook. Mm-hmm. Okay, a little shook, and we've been talking about it all season. Everyone has been focused on the Sixers Nets. What are the Nets going to do with Joel Embiid? Oh my God, that's so scary. You and I have been saying all year, the Bucks are actually the team that are the worst matchup for the Nets because they have so much length plus athleticism, and they have the best perimeter defender in the NBA in Drew Holiday. They can just make the Nets very uncomfortable. What Steve Nash didn't do in this game, though, was he had a very traditional lineup coming out on the floor. The starting lineup against this Bucks team was Kyrie, Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan at center, Jeff Green, and Kevin Durant. That's like the big Nets lineup, right? That's the jumbo lineup for the Nets. The Nets didn't do small ball. They didn't really go Kevin Durant at the five, surround him with Joe Harris, Shamit, and then eventually in the playoffs, Kyrie Irving and James Harden, right? Like, the Nets have that lineup that they will hopefully be able to have in the playoffs, and it will force Brooke Lopez off the floor. Not that Brooke was, like, incredibly impactful, but it's going to force him off the floor and force the Bucks to be flexible, something Mike Budenholzer isn't. Mm-hmm. Budenholzer isn't flexible. This has been his problem his whole career as a coach. He has an amazing system, but he likes to have his team play a specific way. Mm-hmm. The thing that the Bucks have this time around, though, that they do have PJ Tucker. And Tucker only had 3 points in this game, but he is still this sort of like this oddly impactful guy, even when he only has 3 points in a basketball game. I don't know, Bri. They need James Harden, okay? Everything looks different with James Harden. Everything changes. He makes the team better. There was something else a lot of people were really upset with on Twitter last night, Bri. Okay. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Sure.
So the Nets had a stretch. There was an amazing stat that the TNT broadcast put up going into the fourth quarter. The Nets had the lead going into the fourth quarter. The Nets had basically won like 31 out of 33 games where they had the lead going into the fourth quarter. And the Bucks were like 4-17 if they were trailing in the fourth.
Okay.
And the Bucks ended up winning this game. They only had a 2-point lead, I think, going into the 2 or 4 point lead the Nets did. But as the Bucks got the lead and then began expanding it, the Nets and Steve Nash did not call a timeout. People were very upset that Steve Nash did not call a timeout. And he was asked about it in the post-game press conference. And Steve Nash said, "We could have called a timeout here or there for sure, but there's also a part of our team that you want to learn to problem solve." And then he kind of went on to say, "Could I have called a timeout? Sure. But also, maybe I didn't want to," which he didn't really want to. Did you feel like how much blame does Steve Nash get? It was the lack of timeout. Would that have altered the fabric of the future? Could everything be different? Was that the butterfly effect for the future?
I would say it was part of a chorus of things that were not going well. But I will say that when I take ayahuasca and see myself as a professional NBA coach, what kind of a coach would I be? I think of myself as a pretty auto timeouty kind of guy, a reflex timeout kind of guy. I just feel like you're not taking them to heaven with you. You got to use those timeouts. You got them. Let's go. If something's going wrong,
got them. Smoke them.
Yeah, exactly. So I err on the side of stop the bleeding, the triage timeout. I understand that that's everyone's got their own way, and I don't know that there's ever been a longitudinal study about what's the best way to.
That would be a good study.
I think it would be a good study.
I don't know how that would be tough to kind of figure out the parameters of it, but to figure out, like, teams going on a run, the other team, when they call timeout, the effect post timeout.
I don't think it'd be that hard. I feel like you could sort of Well, you would have to do a poll on like when is the time where it's become timeout time. That's sort of like where you need to get a consensus on, right? Like,
I think you could figure that out, right? Like the consecutive baskets made by opposing team,
right,
into a timeout. It's probably like 5 baskets in a row.
There's a range. Whatever, there's going to be a range.
Yeah, there's a range.
Let's do this. Let's do this study. What, Glue Guys Institute? Who wants to fund this research? I also acknowledge though that that's not a universal norm, right? That's like there are coaches who are notoriously reflexive timeouters, and there's plenty of very good coaches who are definitely not that way. I can't think of any examples right now, but I'm sure there are plenty.
So I have an example, okay. And this is how I'll defend Steve Nash. Greg Popovich is the type of guy.
I was going to say it was Pop, but I thought it was.
Pop is the guy who for many years has used the regular season as a laboratory to figure out things about his team, to allow his team to work out things. And he's classically at various times been a non-timeouter. He's the type of guy who will let his teams work out their stuff. He does odd lineups. He puts guys in the starting lineup and mixes and matches. And he will also not call timeouts at specific moments when other coaches would, just to see how his team would react. Mm-hmm. Now, so if you're doing something that Popovich is doing, it's probably a good thing. And I think overall, you don't want to be how did you describe yourself? An auto timeouter?
Yeah.
What was?
Something
yeah.
like that.
As, yeah. So I think as a coach, like, I don't like the energy of like, oh crap, we just gave up 4 straight baskets. Coach is going to call timeout. He's going to save us. Like, mm-hmm. I like a coach like Steve Nash being like, guys, figure it out. You guys are good. You've won championships. Why don't you try to figure it out on the floor? And he's done that the entire year. So I was completely fine with the lack of a timeout. I am not an apostle of the timeout army.
Can I say something? Is there a way to track what coach leads the – like, does anyone keep a record of how many people have timeouts that – like they didn't use over the course of a game, and who has the most of those? Because that's
you're forced to be Google.
My like board game brain is thinking about like it's a resource to be used. It's, you know, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage in the macro if you're not using all of your resources in the time they're supposed to be used. Is that a thing? Are you Googling it right now?
Yeah, this is gonna.
It's
this
a tough way Google. Too, that's gonna be a tough Google.
There is a Reddit. Yeah. Which coaches call the most least timeouts? But this is from 5 years ago, and the first hit is Jeff Hornacek. So I don't know if it's like the best data.
It's good data. That checks
9
out.
Comments.
Yeah.
And it's from Suns Reddit.
Got it.
So that's why I think about Jeff.
Oh, so it's a joke.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Damn it.
Yeah, I understand everyone who thought that the Nets should call timeout. Steve Nash should call timeout during the fourth quarter as the Bucks got the lead and they were expanding the lead. Those are times when you see every other coach in the NBA do that. I support the sort of the let the players figure it out or try to figure it out on their own theorem. I support that. It is a Popovich thing, and not that Steve Nash played for Greg Popovich, but there's a lot of – you can see that there's a lot of sort of the similar DNA in between the two coaches, where Steve Nash is just a nice guy and Popovich is just a grumpy guy with the media. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Now, the thing is that's going to be different is that in the playoffs, you can't just let guys work stuff out because each game matters so much more. So I am interested to see, you know, that's like Nash, again, like Pop, has used the whole season, partly due out of, you know, he's forced to do so as a laboratory. You know, guys have been in and out of the lineup. He's been giving guys, role players, big minutes, and then he takes it away and then comes back and then gives them again. We talked about this before. Is Steve Nash going to become much more regimented in the postseason? Because you kind of need to be that way. But I also think with the Nets team, it's like you could have a 35-minute Blake Griffin game and then come back around and then Nick Claxton's getting those 35 minutes the next game in the playoffs. So it's just
there's also different. Another sort of like half of that logic wheel that I could go to the other side, which is like there's, you know, there's the player's version of it where he's like, sorry,
I love this is one of those Brian logic wheel.
Yeah.
Like, is that a real phrase or is this just a thing you invent?
It's a thing I'm inventing.
You
right
invented
now.
The wheel.
Yeah. Where, so we're looking at like players. Can they problem solve? Well, what about you, Steve? Can you problem solve this into a heckin' win, buddy? Are you going to problem solve that dub? Because what matters for you is getting dubs, you know, and we don't have a whole lot of, I mean, you've gotten plenty of dubs, so there's some evidence to suggest that you can do it. But I would like to see, instead of, you know, because this is a Brad Stevens meme, right, which is like process via over outcomes. And sure. I would say that, like, there's that logic wheel, but then there's the other logic wheel, which is like, can a coach do whatever it takes to manufacture a W when it matters? You know, like, can I put in the right combination of players, rotation, you know, timeouts, whatever in-game management you need to do to actually just pull a W out of your butt? And
that's a great yeah, because we haven't had the Steve Nash is a maestro game. Mm-hmm.
right
like, he manipulated the lineups and the timeouts, because it's one of the few things a coach can really do to halt momentum in a game. We haven't had that,
right?
You know, and the, you know, after timeout plays, and well, he's pretty good at that.
Yeah,
I mean, that, obviously, he's a basketball genius.
It's very convenient to be like, well, you know, I wanted to teach them a few things about their problem solving issues. Like, all right.
It's like when my son like has a meltdown at the grocery store. It's like, I just want to let him work through this, those feelings.
You wouldn't recognize it, but this is a lesson we're teaching him right now.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. Like, I understand both sides. Mm-hmm. I understand the call the timeout people, the cabal of call the timeouters, mm-hmm. and the anti timeout army.
It is a cabal. It is a global cabal. Yeah.
But you know, I do think it matters. So Nash also had this quote, and it's weird how ESPN sort of aggregated it in this way, where the aggregation headline for Steve Nash's quote was, Nash, colon, the Nets have a chemistry gap. Okay? And when you listen, so when I read that, I'm like, oh my God, mm-hmm. Steve Nash is throwing these guys under the bus. When you listen to the video, which is what it was, Nash is just talking about how he's like, you know, we have one team, the Bucks, who've played together for many years, mm-hmm. and they run a system, and they're great in the system, and it's given them a lot of success. And then you have us who, you know, we're a new team. A lot of the guys haven't played together, and we're trying to make up the gap. How do we fit that gap of chemistry between how the Bucks play and how we're playing right now? Can we sort of get our team together? And I love that, too, and I think that's why you see Kevin Durant playing 40 minutes. And that's why they will want James Harden, to link it back to what we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to want to see James. Like, if he's healthy, they're going to want to see him play regardless. He'll want to play.
Yeah.
And I think they want to get Mins for James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant to play together, even if it's a Cavs game at the end of the year that has no impact on the standings.
Big time.
They're going to want to. You just want to see it to happen. do you want to do playoff matchup update real quick?
Yeah, please. Is it going to be about the Wizards? I bet it is.
Play
it?
The sounder. Playoff matchup. The Nets are currently the 2 seed. They are a game and a half above the Bucks. The 76ers are the 1 seed. The Nets are a game and a half behind the Sixers. It's unlikely that the Nets, at this point, having lost the last 3 games and the Sixers winning the past 5 games, that the Nets will catch the Philadelphia 76ers. But this is how it stands right now. 76ers is the 1st seed. They would play whoever would be the 8th seed after the play-in. The Nets are the 2 seed. And right now the 7th seed is your Boston Celtics.
Wow.
We've talked about this a bunch, right? And I'm going to ask you it again, because every time it's different because the teams are playing different. The Heat are the 6th seed. They're a half game above the Celtics. Okay? The Celtics are the 7th seed. What's the gap? How much would you rather see the Celtics versus the Heat?
I mean, lately, the Celtics have looked a mess. I mean, based on what I've been seeing. And their star players are banging each other on the knees. That being said, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a considerable amount. I would prefer to play the Celtics in this moment. I think also it'd be a nice little part of our narrative arc, because I feel comfortable playing them. I think we would get that W. It would be a nice part of the narrative arc to be like, and now we beat you in the first round of the playoffs after all that riffraff about picks and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd stomp the Celtics out of the first round and get Danny Ainge fired.
Right. That would, yeah. And if it ended in Danny Ainge getting fired, then it would be truly a Jason Kidd-esque kiss. That's a perfect kiss.
If the, I mean, this is, the Nets just lost, you know, three games in a row, but two games against the Bucks that kind of feel like a little demoralizing, even though they were close games. But if the Nets, like, full force, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, played the Celtics in the first round, that was, like, the consolation prize for not getting the number one seed. Mm-hmm. They played the Celtics the first round, beat them in five games. And even the one win the Celtics got, it was just like that game three or game four situation where it was like the Nets just didn't care. And Danny Ainge was like just pushed out and like moved to a different part of the organization. I want them to bring Billy King back in.
Yeah.
I want the Nets to bring Billy King out.
The Celtics should hire Billy King then in that situation, in that scenario.
I want Billy King to come down from the rafters in the Brooklyn Knight costume. He's
like Sting from NWO Sting.
And I want him just to wave. I mean, obviously no one should be celebrating the Billy King era, but I do feel like we kind of, Billy King has been made a little bit too much.
It's a bit of a pariah. It's unnecessary. Unnecessary.
We all pretty much understand that Prokhorov pushed for that trade in that level.
You're not allowed to say that. This is going to dredge up a whole lot of PTSD.
As much as the deal was not what it was before. There was like one draft pick, and it was just for Kevin Garnett, and then it became the thing it became because ownership wanted to go big. Mm-hmm. And Billy King's, you know, the GM, and he accepts responsibility for, so I want Billy King to come down from the rafters in the Brooklyn Knight outfit and unmask himself.
Yeah.
And just stare down.
Does he give Danny Ainge one of these a tombstone pile driver, a stone cold stunner, or a rock bottom? Your choice. What do you think Billy King's giving him?
I think a stone cold stunner.
I feel like it's a stunner.
Yeah. I think a big swift kick to the gut.
Yeah.
Dropping him down and then clapping some Budweisers together.
That's correct.
I just saw the meme of Stone Cold giving Undertaker the beer, and then Undertaker like looks at it for 30 seconds and then drinks it.
I have not seen this meme.
Oh, it basically symbolizes enemies becoming friends,
right?
And it is poetic and beautiful.
Sounds.
So I got to say that would be, you know, and obviously there's like the Kyrie Irving going to Boston factor, and you know, obviously I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I don't like that energy, but. The Heat are the much better defensive team. Over the season, the Celtics have been the better team than the Heat. The Celtics' point differential is 1.6 positive, where the Heat are negative 0.5.
Yeah.
So they're roughly the same. But that, you know, again, the Heat are better. I don't really want the Heat in the first
Something round. That's also just been, I mean, this has been an interesting season for a million reasons, but also it's been so volatile with, like, when a team is good or isn't good. You know, like the Wizards right now are having a bit of a moment. And it's actually a pretty interesting season for having this play-in tournament for the first time, because there's been such sort of volatile ups and downs in, what are you looking for? Are you looking at something? Googling?
No. I thought my recording had stopped.
Oh gosh.
And it didn't.
Oh Lord in heaven. Yeah. Anyways, it's a good season to experiment with this play-in tournament, despite what everyone says. I'm pro play-in for the moment.
Yeah, LeBron, because they're the sixth. Now they're back at the sixth seed, and they're outside the play-in tournament, and the Trailblazers are the seventh seed. And so anyways, so it's incredibly, you know, not getting the first seed is a real blow. I mean, it's not over yet. There's a lot.
I'm over it. I'm past it. Now we're playing Boston in the second round. Who cares? Forget it.
I think the moment James Harden steps on the floor, we're going to feel pretty good about ourselves, right?
I hope that it immediately comes flying back. And I hope that he plays more than just like two regular season games here. He's also on my fantasy team. So, you know, for those, I'm in the finals here, built up with just, it's all smoke and mirrors at this point.
Thank you all for listening at BK Glue Guys on Twitter. Thank you. There's a couple of people that have been hopping in the Apple Podcast ratings.
Oh.
So we're over, I think, 300, and I appreciate it. Let's get over 1,000 by tomorrow would be super cool.
Five stars, we want them, we need them. Shout out to the Discord. Link to join the Discord is in the Twitter bio. There's a little, it says chat, and then there's a Discord invite there, and then you can come in, and we're all hanging out, guys. We're all hanging out, and we Twitch during game time, all that good stuff. Lots of good, we're just a real media enterprise here, an empire even, Mike, with you involved.
Thank you all for listening.
Jeez.
At BK Glue Guys on Twitter.
Thanks, everybody. Oh, shout out to Nets Daily and The Athletic, too. Yeah. No, that's it. Forget it.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.